Hey everyone, welcome to Mass Construction Show with today's guest, Rob McKinney, former podcast host, ConApp guru, and now director of safety at AGC Georgia. I'm your host, Joe Kelly, and this is a podcast about all things Massachusetts and beyond. We're back with another Carving Your Own Path episode, this time with Rob, who has a truly unique path of religious studies major to construction, to technology, and beyond. Rob is an amazing example of leveraging continual growth and learning to position himself into a career that fits his interest and lifestyle. I found Rob's story to be a great inspiration about what is possible for all of us and proof that anyone can step out of the predetermined paths we might find ourselves in. Okay, folks, remember, time to like, share, write a review. I see them all, and I appreciate what you do to make this show better. Speaking of making the show better, today's show is brought to you by Central, commercial carpenters, and supporters of our conversations. If you've thought to use Central or have used Central because you hear them being a supporter of the show, please let them know. They would love to hear it. Enjoy the show. Hey, Rob, welcome to Mass Construction Show.
Good morning, Joseph. Appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today, sir.
Great. Thanks for joining us. I know you got a safety lunch scheduled this afternoon. You're down in Atlanta, Georgia.
That's right, in the balmy state of Atlanta and Georgia today.
Yes, we were chatting earlier where both of us having worked for the AGC before, that January and February up here were kind of off the table for us because of snowstorms, and you have the luxury of other than a nasty ice storm now and again, January and February aren't a problem. It's a wonderful thing.
That's it. We'll be highs in the 50s today. The sun's out. It's good. It's a very good day.
Love it. So, Rob, you know, I asked you to come on because, you know, I've watched you now for quite some time. First came on my radar was Construction Tech Trio, which we can kind of talk about as we get going. But I thought you would be a good example for this kind of, I don't want to call it a series because we're not like they're in order or anything, but people that I have come in talking about kind of carving your own path. People that have taken atypical paths in construction, don't need to be PE, APM, PM, senior PM, PX kind of role. Wonderful thing to do. It's great. I thought that's where I wanted to go. It's not a knock on it. But as someone who it wasn't a right fit, but still loved construction, this is just all about talking to people that are in construction, but didn't necessarily take that traditional path and took a path maybe just more based around their interests and what they like. So that's really why you're here today. And, you know, maybe could you tell folks how you broke into construction to begin with?
You know, Joseph, I think I am a living example of what you're talking about. In the industry for a long time, you know, people were born into it, honestly. Carpenters, pipe fitters, electricians. If you talk to some seasoned veterans, they talk about their daddy, their granddaddy. That's kind of how they were brought into the business. But with my introduction, it was a second career. I have a degree in religion and philosophy. I was in the U.S. Peace Corps, came back late 20s. Kind of lost, not sure what I was going to do. And my dad was a banker. Bankers have lots of construction customers. One thing led to another. And I had an introduction to my first employer who was looking for a safety person. And I was that non-traditional person of, I did not come up through the trades. I did not have a degree, but I had a passion to learn. And an opportunity was extended to me to come into the industry as a safety professional at, you know, 28 years old. Where it was kind of a unique world of, I had to ask a lot of questions and people kind of knew, you know, if you know the term greenhorn, I was as grain could get. But I had that opportunity where I was a little bit of a deviation from traditionally in construction or went to school for it and came in from the side door where I know probably a dozen or more people that fit that kind of bill that we were offered an opportunity. It looked exciting. Thought I could do that. And then you kind of get after it and you try it where it's, I think we've even seen a further shift now where there are so many professionals that were recruited out of high school and or college and are getting that specific training on the job training, you know, being an apprentice in the professional side, right? And also in the trades where in probably three generations, we have seen a huge shift from literally born into the business to attracted to the business. And it's not so much born in the business now with a lot of the professionals getting the degrees, but they are definitely recruited a whole different avenue than I was, for sure.
Yeah, that's an interesting kind of thread that you're starting to pull on there, which is even there's some of the GCs still in the Boston market here that the much older way of doing things was usually it was a union carpenter that became a foreman, was running work, and then they became a superintendent. And that was kind of the pipeline to that position. And then maybe that super became a project manager. And I think the knowledge base on that person was probably a lot greater than someone like me who got a 4-year degree in construction management, right? But we've created this new path, right? Or we've deviated from that old one. And I think there's some pros and there's some cons, but you're right. It was definitely a much different pipeline into the business.
Well, it's two different knowledge sets. You know, when we're talking about the person riding to work in the truck or the van with their family, who's teaching them and telling them stuff all the time. There's a whole different bonding network there when, you know, dad, granddad, uncle, aunt, whoever is telling you, you know, this is how it works, or maybe imparting on you some knowledge of don't do it like this from a safety or quality perspective. Then there's the book knowledge side of, you know, when I first got in the business, I went to Georgia Tech for the OSHA training center. I probably went through 300 or 400 hours of book training, where I was taught the regs, but then I had to go out in the field and work with the foreman, the supers, the craft, and, you know, have to say, okay, so the book says you can't do X, but how can you accomplish the task, you know, in a different way? And it's that merging of the tribal knowledge of there's how the industry works with the book knowledge. That's always been a hat trick for companies to try and pull off of. How do you do that mentoring of the way in the field and then the books and the documents?
Yeah. And now, did you feel like did you enjoy safety? Were you like, hey, I like safety, this is a career I see myself in? Or is this kind of like, it's something new, I'll learn it and then move on? Like, how did you feel about safety coming from a completely non-construction background?
You know, it was a mixed bag. There was the excitement and opportunity to learn something new. And if you ask a lot of safety professionals, there's also a little bit of kind of, you know, a mantle, so to speak, that you're kind of designated as the safety person. You were, you know, let's say back in 2001, you were the champion for the worker to try and make sure that they went home safe each and every day. Because, you know, let's be honest, construction has not always looked at safety in the most positive light. So here I am, I'm a green safety person. So I'm new to the business and I'm safety. There's kind of back in the day, that was two big strikes that everybody looked at me sideways.
Yeah, there was almost and I hate to say it, but it's reality. There's a disrespect towards safety.
Oh, and that's
it's changing, you know.
It's changing. It's getting a lot better. You know, I try and tell newer safety professionals, there are things that I hope you'll never have to go through. I've been called every name but the Son of God. I've had my name on blue cans across the Southeast. I've been thrown off of projects, had guns, knives pulled. You know, back in the day, it was still kind of the Wild West, because it was still so combative, with a lot of safety pros took a lot of grief because so many construction pros thought, you're here to slow me down, you're going to take my money, you're holding me back. They still didn't have that mental model of understanding there's a reason for these rules. There's a reason to wear personal protective equipment. It's something I've been pressing from day one of safety. Really, you should think of safety as your best friend. We're here to look out for the betterment of all the craft workers, everybody on a site, that everyone should be able to work, make their money, go home and take care of a family. And that mental model, I'm still pushing today going into 2023 of, you know, safety's not here to slow you down. We're not a world of no's. We're more of a world of what ifs, of trying to just make sure, again, people can do their work and not get hurt. Because I know people with lifelong injuries. It's bad. It still happens because this is, unfortunately, a very dangerous industry. And, yep. But it, again, it's that mental model of the old way versus this newer way.
Yeah. So you had the kind of dual disrespect, to use my phrase on it, of being green and being safety.
Yeah, I was new and safety. Ooh, that was a hard load back in 2001, 2003.
Yeah, but you got there, became an affinity for it, and you started to enjoy it. And
yeah, it's one of those things that it pulls you in, right? Of, I had a degree in something different, different interest, but I got pulled in and saw such a huge need for safety. And that, you know, at the time there wasn't a lot of champions, but luckily, you know, we talk about our common thread with the AGC. So the company I worked for was a member. I started attending the safety committee meetings to actually learn from other trained professionals, seasoned professionals, where you get more inspired because you see the possible of, here's some really cool things that other companies are doing in safety. Or you also had somebody to kind of cry on their shoulder of, why'd all the superintendents tell me to get lost the minute I show up on a job site? You know, they could really help you out with some of the tricks of the trade. I always call them this Jedi mind tricks of, how was I going to go out and do an industry that really didn't look too favorably upon what I was trying to do? Mm-hmm. But it took a few years, right, to make the bond with the workers, the foremen, the supers, to get to the point that they weren't trying to literally throw me off the job. Or I can remember going on a couple of job sites that the superintendent had no idea who I was calling the owner of the company saying, get this guy off my job. What is going on here? You know, it was a very different cultural time, man.
Yeah. I mean, I know so many safety folks that are now considered assets at the company, in what a swing, and rightfully so. You know, I mean, like, I'm saying that just to be honest, because that used to be the mindset. In some cases, depending on the company, it still is, you know. Oh, yeah. That's the safety cop. They're coming around to, you know, write me up for not doing this, or try and get me thrown off the job. And, but yeah,
Joseph, I can remember being told I was a necessary evil. I was the quote cost of doing business back in the day. And that's what we're talking about, versus there are companies that actually look at safety as an investment, as part of the profit equation. There's even some companies, if you really dive into, you know, the insurance side of things, when companies start running CSIPs, for example, there's a lot of reasons why they run a CSIP, but let's not kid ourselves.
Make money
is part of a CSIP. And, you know, without safety programs in place, that doesn't happen. So yes, in 20 years, there's been a huge shift, definitely at the corporate office level, from, you know, the quote shiny shoes, the people running the companies have kind of had to look at insurance and cost and escalation, and then the aging workforce. There's a lot of things working on them that's different than in the field. So there's been a lot of advancement in 2 decades that I've been around this industry, for sure.
Yeah. And the reality is, it's just all rolled in that risk management thing that a company has to look at.
Right? That's right.
And what's the risk? The risk is lost cost, right? Mm-hmm. So how are we more profitable? And you know, safety is a part of that equation. So then you become an asset from a profitability standpoint. And then you also can become an asset in an operation side of things. Like, okay, hey, I need to do this. I need to do it safely. Rob, Garrett, you know, Gavin, like, how do I do this in a safe way? Or what's the regulation say here? Or what's my cost exposure because it's a confined space? What do I need to do from a regulatory standpoint? Mm-hmm. And then they're not buying out some job and then realizing they have to have, you know, a confined space entry program and rescue crews there and all these costs they didn't cover. And, you know, it's exciting to see how far we've come, as much as I don't think we're close to where we really should be yet, as an industry. There are companies that are there, but I think from an industry, no. You started to enjoy construction, enjoy safety, start to get, you know, the right relationships with people. And I just mean in a operational standpoint, not like relations to get somewhere, but just to become part of the team. But you always, what was the foray? Because I first think of you as a guy that loves tech and is into tech. Like, what was that What was your first entry into the tech side of things from construction?
You know, I've always explained it in presentations and talks. It was a little selfish. About 10 years into the industry, I'm, as a safety professional, handled a lot of paper, safety mm-hmm. meetings, safety inspections. And it just drove me crazy of why could I not get the safety documentation turned in on time on a Monday morning versus, you know, at the time, the company I worked for, we had, you know, over 200 craft workers. And by sure, every Monday morning by 9 a.m., all those time cards would get in. You know, some supers would have 5, 10, 20, even 50. And it just irked me. I was like, how can we get all the time cards in? But I would start asking, hey, where's your safety meeting? Oh, I'll send it to you a little bit. Hey, where's your safety inspection? Oh, it's on the way. And, you know, I wasn't stupid. I could read between the lines of they weren't getting it done when they were supposedly supposed to be getting it done. And I started looking at apps because when the tablets first started coming out, it was something to look at. In my personal life, I always loved technology. You know, I'm a child born in the 70s. I grew up in the 80s, so I played a lot of video games. You know, I was exposed to computers at an earlier age than a lot of generations. And I saw the value of, well, why can't we digitize this? You know, we do, you know, back in the day, electronic email. Now, mm-hmm. with the tablets coming out and actually being viable, and specifically, you know, the iPad. When Apple came out with their devices, the vision Steve Jobs had was amazing. And I noticed a few trades on site with very early, very basic, you know, PDF markup tools. And I started looking and thinking, what else could we do with that? And I honestly was at home going through the Apple App Store and type in the keywords construction and safety, quality. And I started just experimenting. And so the original value prop for me was, no one was turning in safety paperwork on time. I had huge doubts of when they did it, how they did it, fill in the blank. And so mm-hmm. I was experimenting with those early apps to make an easier way to digitize that they would do the workflow. But as bad as it sounds, I could also quality control because with digital, I now knew the time, the date, and in some cases, the location where a form was filled out. Mm-hmm. Now, it was helping me as a safety manager. But was it really helping the field? You know, they hadn't quite crossed that plane yet. Now, in the organization, as I started showing what I considered a success with converting safety forms, then it was, well, what else could you
do? We do around here?
Yeah. Right. So time cards, check. Daily reports, check. When I really started looking at the money side of paper-based plans and how much money we were spending to print the plans for ourselves. And if you remember back in the day for the trade partners, you know, you would walk into our office and there would be just rolls of paper lined up for the trades to come get the plans. And so that was a huge cost to the bottom line. And as we started thinking about, if you remember FTP servers and trying to at least put them digitally somewhere, when we got to the point of PlanGrid, you know, I always talk about finding that platform. I was trying one, but a project manager, I walked into his trailer and he said, have you heard of PlanGrid? You know, back in the day, nope, never had a clue. Well, we looked at it. The price point was pretty good because back in the day, their original first plan, you know, up to 50 sheets was free. Free is hard to argue with. So when I started actually getting traction on the plans and the dailies, all the other things, it was like, yes, we need to do this. Let's get tablets. Let's go all in. And, oh, you can do safety too. That's great. But yep. I was willing, hey, fine. Safety's on the menu. So originally we had, I think, 15 superintendents that I was working with and trying to digitize those workflows and then reach out to our trade partners and talk to them too, mainly on the plans of, hey, look, we're gonna use these tablets and we want to use these apps. And you can imagine there was a little bit of pushback. There was a lot of, why do we got to do this? And some trades got it and some didn't. So the deeper I kind of got into the technology to see those operational efficiencies, it kind of pulled me in a little more. And then as I was working with what I now had that I never had before was safety data, I could see, you know, at a base level, I was tracking how many superintendents turned in their meeting and inspection on Monday or not, and how many days late was that deviation. as they started filling out the forms, then I could start tracking things a little bit better. Cause, you know, instead of me taking a paper form from 15 people, then trying to figure out how many violations or hazards they corrected versus mine, and then enter that to an Excel spreadsheet and you know, run macros and try to present data to management. And it was now there. It was those early beginnings for me to really see how data could help me on certain things. Or I tell you, one of the bigger projects that really showed us so much, about 2 years in, we were building a four-story stick-built apartment in downtown Atlanta, where that was the first time we had all of the trades, the owner, the architect, everybody on that project was all in. And again, you know, we used one product, PlanGrid, that held the plans, but it also did the checklist, the punch list. So we went through and had everybody in that cycle on the same page. That's where the owner really saw value, that for the first time, there was one punch list to rule them all. No one debated the punch list. We worked through the punch list. And we had a very clear line of sight to collecting retainage as fast as we could get it. That kind of really sent shockwaves through the company of, okay, wow. It wasn't just that, you know, crazy safety guy wanted us to put the plans in this thing and we could all see them. It wasn't just that all the trades were building from the proper set of documents and our quality was even better. You know, bottom dollar that we got to collect retainage probably faster than we ever had, because we had it all in one system and everyone agreed and nobody argued. That was a huge push through of what tech could do for a company. You know, I was straining way away from safety, even risk management. I was in quality and operations, but that's kind of really pulled me in a little bit more.
Yeah. So that, like, the shared agreement and just housed in one place with quality data, like active, we are 87% done with X and everybody is in agreement of that. There's no deviation there. Now, it's funny. So maybe that's the first kind of tact in your career. You know, your title probably never changed, but your role did, right? You were, I don't want to make it sound as simple as just say IT, but you were safety and what would you call that implementation of technology kind of?
Well, a lot of people using a term back in the day, construction technologist, and I forget who the first person was that made it up and said it, but I remember hearing that around 2013, 14. Because there was this new development, to your point. There was IT in the industry. Information technology was the email, the servers, the protection, the back end. They ran the office. As mobile technology came out, some IT professionals embraced it and leaned into it and were working with it. Others were putting up their walled gardens of saying, no, this is IT. This is not your world. And I was kind of that rebel saying, well, I have these needs and you don't want to do it, so how are we going to do that? And I met a few other people like that along the road, and I met a few other people that had very integrated programs. So really, it's when the evolution went from just pure information technology to the field side of construction technology. And yeah, I had unofficial title. I was empowered by the owner to investigate and leverage the tech, or I worked with our IT director. Was in the office. I was the one more out in the field of trying these apps and seeing how we could push the data back and how to use it and share it in the office. And lots of companies across the country had that similar catalyst, that there was this champion, a person in the field that wanted to use tech, and there really wasn't a term or a title. We are, you know, 2023, and I see so many opportunities listed on LinkedIn for construction technologist or VDC coordinator manager. There's a whole new genre of workers in the last 10 years that didn't exist before because the tech wasn't there.
Yeah. I mean, putting VDC aside, like it's, I think it's not even similar to IT. It's almost like process, right? I mean, if I find an app that, you know, helps me edit a particular video in an easier way on my phone because I'm not good at that, right? Like, I'm not IT. I'm just figuring out, hey, this is a good process and this is a good tool for this process. And that's what you were really doing. You were kind of almost like almost operational, like how to use
that's right
tech in a tactical way to problem solve and streamline an operation.
Yeah.
Right. So it's interesting, like that role, like what is that? It's not IT. There is the VDC folks that will offer, and I joke with a handful of them that I know pretty well, like people just automatically think that, you know, hey, like I think there's something wrong with the router. We'll go get the guy that does BIM. He'll know about, like, no, like it's not like, oh, he knows computers. They can do everything. Like, you know, he can write code for the, you know, to adjust our website. Like, no, they can't, you know? So yeah, it's a funny world. I wonder how it all actually shakes out and becomes identified, or maybe it just moves too fast to actually end up in like actual job titles, right?
That's true. It depends, honestly, I think, on the fabric of the culture at the company. There are some that are very well defined and thought out. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that from the $1 billion range down to the $100 million range. It's really that culture of what the company looks at as far as technology is integrated, to your point, into the processes. Because what you're talking about is a lot of what I was doing was first process change. And I love our industry, but as a lot of us know, people don't like change in this industry. So I was moving a lot of cheese, so to speak. So process change, and there was process management and change management, all this going on. Again, an untrained person that, you know, again, I came into the industry, I have a degree in religion and philosophy. I was trained in wholly different things, but there was a will and we had to find a way. And that's what we plowed a lot of ground doing. And several of the other people that I know around the industry, there was people all over the US doing the same kind of experiment of, hey, we could do something better. How do we do that? There was no playbook. There wasn't courses to go to in 2012, 13, 14. It's kind of how I got my start with the agency Georgia. They heard what I was doing and asked me, would you do like a lunch and learn and just show some of these apps to other members? And I can remember sitting there in our office and having a lunch and learn of talking about things like iAuditor and PlanGrid. And people are nodding their head and, hey, that's pretty good. And they're looking and downloading apps, and other people are looking at me kind of,
hey, crazy. Yeah.
Crazy. And it grew from there, one little presentation at a time after another.
Yeah. What was the first job title that was no longer safety? Like, from your career? Sorry, I took a hard turn there, but like.
Oh, yeah. No. So I left construction first. And I spent 6 months in the insurance industry because I was very passionate about safety still, but I liked technology. So I went over and I was a risk control engineer for an insurance company. And I was pushing very hard about the use of tech to improve safety versus the traditional risk management control methods. In 2015, that industry didn't want to hear it, shall we say. And we quickly came to an agreement of, hey, I'm really into tech and what I think it can do, and you're not, so this is probably not going to work. And along that way, the last year or two, I'd met a gentleman named James Benham from JB Knowledge, and I heard him speak a couple of times, and his ideas and thoughts were really inspiring to me. And I also knew Josh Bone here from Atlanta. We all kept talking, you know, what are the options, what are the possibilities, how could we work together to help the industry? And so that's when I joined up with James over at JB Knowledge, and we created what people first remember was the Contech Trio, and then evolved into the Contech Crew. And so then I was a technology consultant. And so I spent 3 years traveling the country with those guys, and we worked with small companies, large companies, trade associations. We were able to work with a little bit of some, you know, product developers. We had fascinating conversations with lots of contractors where that's when I had my safety knowledge background, and I kind of focused very hard on the mobile apps for a company, safety first, their time, their dailies, like the mobile side of things is where I really focused. James was more on the accounting. Josh was our BIM person. We brought in a few other people where we kind of had different knowledge sets that we were looking at a company, and we would evaluate their tech and give them an opinion of what we considered, you know, here's the baselines of what we consider modern, you know, good use of tech. Some companies were doing good. Some needed a lot of help. But, you know, that 3 years I was traveling around and had the amazing opportunity to see so many different things behind the curtain. You know, not every company was doing bad. It was just that different areas of the company weren't quite there. Or we had a few that we went and they were doing amazing. They just didn't realize it. We just had to kind of put it on a pedestal and show them like, hey, compared
you're ahead of the curve here.
We've seen you're doing good. Yep. So there was a lot of different things we saw over those 3 years.
So that's interesting. So I never really understood entirely what JB Knowledge did, but so you were really construction technology consultants.
In our little group, yes. Now, the company James had, you know, they built and sold product. There was a whole, the company really operated wholly on its own. We were this interesting little side division, and we were there to do research. We were there to consult with companies. And then it kind of grew and morphed. You know, we created the podcast. Mm-hmm. The podcast led to us then being, you know, we had the honor of covering events like Autodesk University. We went to ConExpo, I believe it was 2017. Procore groundbreaks, things of that nature. But we also worked with a lot of trade organizations. We were blessed to work with the NCAA, with SMACNA, with NECA. We did a little bit with the AGC. You know, we were working in circles of contractors, trade associations, manufacturers of equipment. You know, we've been to interesting skunk work labs to see how batteries are made or equipment is made. And all of that, we would just collect and collect, and then we were sharing it. And we're trying to share it through our consulting efforts. We were putting out through the podcast, the videos that we would make. So there was just a tremendous effort of, we were trying to absorb as much information as we could. And we were pushing it out and sharing it through different channels and trying to just, the core of it was still trying to improve and better the industry.
Yeah. And then, so just out of curiosity, what else did JB Knowledge do? You said they had the whole business where they were selling products and stuff, but what was the balance of their business?
The main part was the product that they created. You know, he had a couple of products that were out there. One you may know, remember the name was SmartBid. So he had that platform that actually was acquired, but they also did a lot of private work that, you know, we were insulated far from that. We were on the very public side of educating, speaking, the podcasting, the research, the consulting. You know, it was a very small team kind of way out on the side. We were pushing boundaries, trying to inspire companies and work with companies of, yeah, if you want to use tech, you should use some tech. You know, we used to joke, and unfortunately still, I think in 2023, the joke's kind of still there of, you know, we would talk about, you know, an iPad is really kind of the modern hammer. In 2012, people thought we were crazy. In 2023, I still have to have that conversation with people. You know, buying technology for your crews, it's a good idea. You're kind of late to the party. If you're just now buying a tablet,
Or maybe the more appropriate analogy is it's a screw gun.
Could be.
Right? Because, like, you still might be using a screwdriver, right? But, hey, there's this thing called a screw gun out there, right? You know? Or maybe you've got a screw gun with a cord, you know? And cordless with a lithium ion battery, like, you know? But, yeah, it was funny. So, like, it was a lousy transition I did there, but in my mind, I had like, oh, here, I saw how your path went, which was it was safety, and then you had that other role that you created without changing your title, you know, and that's what my step was like. Okay, well, what was the like next kind of curve there where you kind of completely left? That's JB Knowledge. Whose idea was it to spin up the podcast?
It was the three of us. James, Josh, and I were talking. And back in the day, we did a lot of presentations. James has probably done 500-600, probably even more by now. Josh had done several hundred. I was just kind of cutting my teeth. And when we thought about, okay, how can we get our word out to more people? You know, there's only so many construction conferences you can fly to or drive to and speak to.
Yeah, that's hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah, you got to be there. But with the podcast kind of growing and we all listened to different ones, it was, well, if we did this show, we could get in people's ears each and every week. And so we kind of, you know, sketched out and thought about it. And if you go back and listen to the first few episodes, you know, it kind of embarrassed a little bit, you know, there's a lot of growing pains, right? Of we were patching the tech together to understand how do we connect each other? How do we record this thing? How do we push it out? You know, there's a lot of learning curve, but you know, you put three dedicated pros together and we figured things out. And then James put more resources to it. We brought some more people on. And as you start looking at it, the evolution, it was purely audio only. And then we grew into video, and then we grew into so many things to where arguably, if you look at the polished product, you know, 3 years in, we've had a lot of compliments and we're always very humble. We're very gracious. And it's amazing that people still listen to the show. When I still speak and I'm out in public, I still have humbling moments that people, they may not recognize my face, but 30 seconds into me talking to them, they'll get that look and they recognize my voice and they know who I am. It's still so humbling and just trips you out that how could you have heard my voice in Spokane, Washington or Washington, D.C. and I've never met you before. But that show, you know, we went from nobody listened to 50 to 100 people listened. I remember when we would start looking at the numbers, when it was getting to the 2000 range, it was just blowing our minds that people listened and we had something that we were offering that they cared about. Very humbling and very honoring.
Yeah. I feel the same about, there was this similar, you know, trajectory. And I always looked at it was like, to me, the odd moment was, but I looked at it as in circles. Like when I was first doing it, I knew everybody that listened.
Oh, yeah.
Because they were people that knew me. You know what I mean? And so, right. like you said, if it was, you know, 50 or 100 people that were listening at first or whatever, like I knew all of them and they listened because they knew me. And then that, you know, that size grew. But then there was like the second circle, which was, okay, like, I maybe don't know them directly, but they know Rob, and that's how they started to listen to it. So like there was this, you know, kind of concentric circles that I kind of knew the listeners. And then it crossed over into, like you said, it's people in other states and people who are local, but I'm like, I have no connection to this person, you know, and they're walking up and saying hello and saying, oh, I love the podcast and I listen all the time. And I'm like, that's where it got almost weird to me. It was kind of uncomfortable, you know, where I'm like, okay, like I have no connection to this person. That's strange, you know? But
it keeps it real. It keeps it real very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. And it makes a lot of fun too. Cause it's like, it gives you the opportunity to meet so many interesting people, you know, with different perspectives. It's fantastic. And it's funny, you guys were still relatively early on in the podcasting. I mean, I was like, I loved podcasting forever. Like I would remember I would take my iPod and I would have to connect it to the computer to download the episode from my laptop onto the iPod to be able to listen to it. Mm-hmm. That was like probably like 2008, 2009, somewhere around there was my guess.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so like I always loved it, but 2015 was still pretty early in the podcasting.
Oh yeah, there was a handful of us, you know, there was a handful that it's where we saw a little bit of blue ocean. We knew that there was a medium we could try and see how that would work. Same thing with Twitter. And, you know, we had experiments. If you remember Periscope, we would literally be at a show with our phones, no microphone. Like we didn't have the gear. We didn't know where we were.
I still don't have the gear.
But we had a way to connect with people that we could not before. And it just kind of grew and grew and the crew grew. We added Jeff Sample. We added Kelly Doyle. We had lots of different teammates. And even now, when you think about the quote content crew, there's people like Tahir Ali from Nika. And there's another side group called Construction Dorks, or guys like Travis. And there's so many different people that it went from 3 to 4 to 5 and it kept growing and growing. And then, you know, now it is a good feeling to look around at different shows that have talked to us and said, hey, you guys kind of gave us the idea. You inspired us to do more and seeing, you know, I don't call them spinoff shows, but there's definitely people that have expressed gratitude and why they created the shows that they have. And it's grown, you know, back when we first started, there was 3 or 4. I remember listening a lot to Todd DeWalt and doing a little bit with him. There was 3 or 4. And now there's got to be at least 12 different ones that in my app, I kind of bounce around and check out different things any given week and there's probably 10 or 12 more I've never even heard of that's still just putting out good content to try and check out.
Yeah. Another individual, James Hilligas, I've had him on the show to talk about prefab, but I think originally saw him on with you guys. You know, for a while he was kind of going on a little regularly. if I'm not mistaken, wasn't he? Yeah.
There's been so many people kind of coming and going where, again, as we grow and we had more people, well, you know, you can only have so many voices on an episode. So then you got to kind of think through, how do you schedule people and how do you rotate people through? So it's always kind of a new voice, but a familiar voice. But yeah, you can't have 12 people interviewing one person. So that kind of, and there are some growing pains, right? Of, okay, we got all these amazing voices of talent, but everybody can't be on a show every week or every other week. And how do you put that together? Man, we're still honestly trying to figure out, what does that rotation look like?
Yeah. As a one person trying to do it, it's complicated scheduling guests and, you know, editing and just like, it's, you know, people never believe me, but I spend a day and a half a week on the podcast.
Oh, absolutely. To schedule it, to research it, to prep for it, to clean it up, to edit it. Oh yeah, man. I feel you. There's about 20 tasks at least to probably put out a well thought out produced show.
Yeah. And then you have the time to actually record it, right? You know, and the talking beforehand, the talking after, the time to record it. And then you want to get even a couple of video clips, and then you've got to write the show notes for the podcast. You've got to write the copy to go with the clips that go to, it's a lot, you know. And now I couldn't imagine having to manage, you know, 7 or 8 different people that are acting kind of as hosts almost. That would be chaos, but you guys are managing. Now I don't want people to think that your journey stops there. That was kind of the foray into, okay, I'm not a safety person. I'm not the safety guy anymore. I'm not a safety manager. You're in the tech world. And then you went full on tech startup, working directly for apps, that kind of thing. What was that decision there? Were you just hey, I'm going to really go all in on this, or?
It was a continual evolution where I came into construction, didn't know construction. So I learned safety, spent over a decade in that, saw so much promise in technology and kept going deeper and deeper, right? Where for those 3 years traveling around, I met a lot of people, met a lot of companies, but still was fascinated more because, again, I was not a trained safety professional. I am not a trained technology professional. Everything you see, you know, learning from sticking my finger
in my
pocket. Yeah. So I had an opportunity to join a technology company to really see, well, how do you, you know, if you like the sausage, go learn how to make the sausage, right? Of seeing how was product made, how was it sold, how. So 2 or 3 years bounced around, was learning different things at different companies and seeing how the founders have this idea and they create a product. And well, how are you going to scale the product? How do you build a team and how do you grow it? So there's a lot in those 3 years of really seeing how to create technology. And specifically for us, it's very geared, you know, arguably niche technology. We're saying this is for construction. And I was kind of in a middle ground of, I was in construction, so I could speak construction. I understood the workflows. I knew what had to happen. And I would work with product developers. I would work with the sales people, the marketing people. I was trying to take the knowledge that I had of firsthand experience. And you're seeing a lot more people making that crossover where technology, to build technology, is definitely a full tech skill set. Rob cannot write code. I don't know how to write code. But I can sit down with a project manager and developers and explain, okay, so how does a time card work? How does a safety meeting work? How does marking up plans, you know, fill in the blank, how does that actually work in the field? And then when you're writing the code, one of the things that I was always pushing so hard on was, listen, if it takes 2 or 3 extra code lines for, if you got to write that to make it easier to use in the field, you need to write that. Because in the field, I was always trying to explain, the more steps they have to do on that tablet or phone or computer, fill in the blank, less likely of adoption you're going to get because they want it to be quick, fast, and easy. So if you got to write 3 lines or 12 lines, write the lines. You're writing to serve a customer. But as I was working with the tech companies, it got really interesting to see building a piece of technology. Let's think of like a very vanilla object that it's general duty and it works for everybody. Mm-hmm. But then each company starts saying, yeah, but why won't it do this? And so then the company starts to augment and change it a little bit. Or maybe they give you some features and they say, you know what, if you want to add your logo, great. If you want to change the font, great. If you want it to be a drop down or this, cool. But then it gets really down to the point where companies are saying, yeah, but we wanted to do these 19 things right now. Why want to do that? Oh, well, that's called custom software.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so yeah. Seeing how it was made at a mass scale or customizable for a few, or then, no, we wanted to do this little thing. Fascinating. But
yeah,
I was working with the companies from the making it side to the marketing side. I was normally kind of at the front end. I would still be out speaking, talking to people, kind of in a business development role of making those relationships of, you know, meeting somebody and understanding, oh, so you still do paper-based time cards. Yeah, that's not fun. Can I show you something that might make it easier? Or project management. Or my last year I was with SafeSight, which was back in my wheelhouse of safety. Mm. And in 2022, it was kind of disheartening, but fascinating that I would say about 80% of the companies that I would come into contact with had never digitized anything. We were going to be literally the first app that the company ever used out in the field, which was kind of a cool experience, a little bit scary.
Yep.
But yeah, 2022 to think you still use paper for everything.
It's wild.
Wow. You know, it definitely would humble me a lot and take that hubris out of tech can solve everything, tech can do this. And then I would run up to a fairly good sized company that it was still all paper in the field, all paper all day.
Mm. Yeah. So you had mentioned the BD side. It seemed like the titles for the different apps you had were working for was business development. And it seems like it's a good thing that it's like, that was what you had to leverage to get into see how the sausage was made, right?
Yeah.
They were like, okay, you've got a decent size footprint in the industry. You have some construction knowledge. You can talk their language. We'll have you be the front man for us and to talk to the client, try and bring in some clients, but also be a middleman with that information. So communicate what the needs were. Is that kind of how it,
that's it. That's it. I was kind of a face that was there for the product to be the tip of the spear, but then bring in, you know, those communications, those interactions, and each company it always kind of worked about the same. When I was brought in as business development, I was out to speak, kind of generate, you know, buzz, get some leads, bring some information in, work with the associations, other products, partners, then the product people would figure out, oh, hey, can I talk to you? I want to show you something. Or different parts of the companies where I would try and, you know, spread that knowledge wealth around and say, all right, cool. What are you building? What's working? What's not working? So it was always, yeah, business development role was the face. And then the back end was where I was trying to help different parts of each company of helping those teammates understand how to either build it better, explain it better, lots of knowledge share going back and forth.
Mm-hmm. And then what was the decision to leave the tech startup world, even the direct employment from tech companies, startup worlds to, I feel like AGC is probably a little closer to JB Technologies, right?
Yeah. Well, as you know, you get a little older, you look at the world a little bit differently. So I'm knocking on 50 and thinking, I have traveled a lot. I've seen a lot of amazing things, but let's just say I'm good with not being on airplanes again for a long time and got a little one that's 10 years old. So to do all these amazing things and all these things that I've seen, you know, the thing that people don't really kind of take into account is the sacrifice it is on your personal life. So I was away from home a lot. You know, I spent a lot of nights in hotels and I was still doing what I wanted to do, but it was really hard on the family side. But now with all the knowledge that I've kind of collected that some people I think find valuable, some people maybe not, there was an opportunity to join a trade association and focus not on a national level, but focus in a region in my home where I live to work with companies that I've known some 20 years, some 15 years. And when I was talking with the chapter executive, you know, there's an opportunity to join and help lead the safety efforts where I knew, okay, I can work with kind of the same companies for a little while and see what is it that I can bring to the table to help them in their journey for safety. Are they trying to become safer? Are they trying to improve the safety program? Because we've got members of all shapes and sizes. We have general contractors. We have trade contractors. We have companies with amazing award-winning, like national level award-winning programs. We have others that are doing regional awards and, you know, all the way down to companies that I still will have to have very interesting conversations of, okay, you do realize OSHA is 50 years old. These are federal regulations you have to follow. It's a wide open world of how I can take what I've learned with safety, what I've learned with tech, with change, process management. Even the last couple of years, it's kind of become a buzzword, but wellness. How can I work with professionals, construction professionals of, again, all age groups, demographics, male, female, you know, fill in the blank of there's a lot of work to do there. And I think right now wellness is falling kind of under safety, HR. It's kind of a, there's no real home for it, but how can I tell stories and show products or bring in speakers to say there's a better way to do things? So one of the things I've always wanted to do in this industry was teach and help other people. I could do that a lot in different roles, but not all the way. So being offered a leadership role with the trade association, where that's kind of the main thing, is bring ideas to help the members, work with members on programs that they want to bring to light or refine or make a little bit better. Who can be that catalyst that, you know, works for the association, who is the staff person that has access to resources or meeting venues, places, and how can I bring people together to learn more and share more? And even still, some of the members, I know I push a little bit on different things. You know, I've got these crazy ideas about data-driven safety of, well, what can data do to help show you, or some of the wellness topics, or even still the technology of, hey, we're going into 2023 and yeah, if you're not outfitting, you know, Rob's personal opinion, if you're not outfitting your foreman, your superintendent, your crews with technology, you're way past late to the party. But I have this conversation just as much as I go to the ones who are so connected, have amazing programs, but then they get to the point a little bit sometimes that there's so much going on and it gets lost in the wash. And how do they refocus and say, we have all this tech, we have all these tools, but where, wait a minute, you know, you hear the term now, data vaults, data lakes. There's companies that have so much data, they don't know what to do with it. Who can give them some ideas of how to pull the, again, that little thread out and add value? So it's kind of put me in a place where I can help a lot of companies in a lot of different ways. It's just, it's a Rubik's Cube for me to kind of turn and twist and say, what help are you looking for? And what resources do we have that I can guide you to?
Yeah. I think there's a lot of room to run on the wellness side of things. That's a topic I'm incredibly interested in and have been for quite a few years now. You know, you haven't seen much from, you know, there's like the well building standard and this Fitwell, and like they didn't get the traction that LEED did on the early side. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, because I think LEED often was just misused. It was to get a plaque on the wall and
a little bit of marketing.
Yeah, you know, and you know, I was just of the opinion, like, okay, well, you could have a 10x better building that has no plaque on the wall. I want the 10x one versus the one with the plaque on the wall, right? So like, why don't we have this be about the end product? And it was great. I mean, LEED probably did get people from an awareness standpoint. It helped. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think there's, if you can have a healthier, happier human as a person, you're going to have a more productive employee. Right. Absolutely. And so it's like, if, you know, and obviously there's a line between people's personal lives and decisions that they make. And I'm a, you know, pretty absolutist on, listen, people can do whatever they want. That's their business. And I don't want anyone telling me what to do. And I don't want to tell anybody else what to do, what to say, what to eat, whatever that is. But it doesn't mean that you can't share the information and let people make those decisions for themselves, you know, or set them up for success with, you know, great food options at your, you know, at your office. Cause it's great to say, oh, here's all this coffee, get them to slam coffee and eat some sugar and get them hopped up. But then when they're, you know, need a nap in the afternoon, how productive are they?
That's it, man. There's right. Just like safety, this has really changed a lot in the last 5 years for sure. And unfortunately, COVID probably brought it to a forefront a little faster than the industry would have of to what you're talking about of you are who you are and you live your life the way you do. But at work, how can companies at least open that dialogue to say, if you're not eating right, or if you're not sleeping well, or if you have issues, you know, how do you become a better person and a better teammate where, man, you know what it was like back in the day? I have been called every name you can imagine. I have been cussed out, thrown off of jobs. And there was a little bit of that machismo attitude just built and ingrained into the industry. And it was suck it up, buttercup mentality. People, if you had an issue, you didn't talk about it. And if there were things going on, it was kind of swept under the rug and shoved in the closet. Now we've all lost somebody or seen bad things happen to people where it's taken me until this year to be open with people about anxiety issues that I had that were self-detrimental that I can now openly share with people of, okay, so have you ever thought about how to learn how to control yourself, like your emotions when you get so mad and so angry? How do you calm yourself down? We weren't taught that in the school system. We weren't taught that by the industry, but now that people are looking at some things, or, you know, people, I've talked about it for years of, I do yoga. And in the construction, you can imagine when I'm on the stage talking about, you should take a look at a yoga program, you know, the rolling eyes and laughing and giggling. And now people are like, yeah, so I tried a little bit of that and it kind of helped me. But, you know, that whole movement of wellness of your mind, your body, your spirit, how can companies, to your point, positively make those impacts or at least be open to dialogue? That's another thing that is a focus of mine now, to show companies there's some different ways that you can operate in different ways, at least to be open to, because different generations, different parts of the country. Yeah, it's an interesting topic to look at, especially where I live at in the Deep South. You know, you bring up meditation or breathe technique or yoga or, you know, buzzword like mindfulness, you still get a lot of rolling eyes and people looking at you kind of sideways of, but then I have other people come up and say, hey, that thing you were talking about, tell me more about that. And if you can just help one person and spread that one seed and the thought goes to a different person, it's just kind of like with safety, you know, it's there for the betterment of the human, the individual, the teammate. Because, hey, yeah, when you look at some of the numbers in our industry over the years, there's been a lot of abuse of some things, a lot of negativity. So we're trying to bring more positivity in for each human, for sure.
Yeah. And it is a thing to figure out, because there's, you know, I don't necessarily know what the right answer is on some of these things. And there is a balance, because you're right. Like, there was the suck it up, buttercup, like, all this other stuff going on before, for sure. But then the pendulum can go too far where it's like, actually they need to be told, suck it up, buttercup. You're getting fucking paid to be here.
Yep.
And you got to do your job. Like, you know, I'm sorry, you don't want to do that, but that's the job description, right? You know?
Absolutely. I'm seeing that a little bit too of, well, okay, if you need a day, take some time, you know, get yourself together. But where do you learn how to do that if you weren't taught those skills growing up? It's I had to do it this week with my 10-year-old daughter, of me trying to teach her, like, okay, you're a product of me. You got a little bit of what I do and a little bit of what your mom. And when you get upset like daddy, you know, I'm trying at 10 to ingrain in her, like, here's some ways to stop yourself before you start spinning out of control. And man, will it set in? I don't know. She becomes a teenager and she's growing. But I've had that same conversation with people that I know in their 40s, 50s, 30s over the last 3 months of, hey, when it gets so crazy, you know, try this.
Yeah.
Because somebody taught me that 2 years ago, one of my coaches, Chad. It changed me. It helped me a whole lot. But why did it take, you know, 47 years of walking around this planet of, you know, proverbially walking into glass walls where I go, oh, stop doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think just by having the conversation, it's now on her radar, right? Where at least, you know, the way you and I were probably told, like, if something like that was going on, like, I'm fortunate anxiety isn't an issue for me, but, you know, I've got other issues. And but we definitely would have been raised in a time where it was you know, like, oh, you're blown out of proportions. Everything's going to be fine. Like, don't worry about it. Well, telling someone that's has anxiety, don't worry about it. Like, that's not helping. So maybe your daughter doesn't act on what you told her, but at least she's hearing that it's not just, oh, don't worry about it. It's not real. Right.
Yep.
At least she hears like, okay, this is real. And, you know, and then she can find out herself, and maybe it's a YouTube video she needs to listen to or whatever, but we're lucky enough. That's the world we live in. But all right, you've been fantastic, Rob, with taking quite a bit of your time already. But I do like to ask everybody at the end of the show two questions. They're kind of one and the same, and you could answer one and not the other, or both, however you feel. But kind of, what do you think we'll see more of over the next 2, 5, 10 years? Pick your number. And what do you think we're going to see less of? And don't feel like you have to be constrained to safety or tech, or just what do you think we see in the industry? I mean, it could be wellness. It could be.
I think you'll see a lot more internal conversations in the next few years. And we desperately need more conversations, because one key thing, you know, we don't really talk about workforce, but with the massive depletion of talent, the skilled trades, project managers, you know, office and field staff leaving the industry, we've got to have people talking to them to understand. And it needs to be, let's say, maybe number one is a knowledge transfer in some way to harness the amount, the amazing amount of knowledge that's out there. How do we bring that into a company, into an organization, into individuals? So I think we're going to see more conversation. Less of, you know, there has been this amazing influx of technology in our industry. And man, I remember back in the day, the crew, we were tracking 300 pieces of technology, and we all had a little idea of how some of this would work. And now the last number I heard was 2,300, 2,400 different pieces of technology just for construction. We're seeing it kind of already. I think you will see a consolidation in the tech space. I hate that for some of the companies, because some of the founders that I've talked to have these amazing ideas. But at the end of the day, if you kind of look at technology, and I'm saying apps and software, if you think in the analogy of trucks or equipment, there's a couple of big companies and they kind of have everything all under one, where rather, you know, if it's trucks, for example, Chevy, Ford, Ram, Toyota, there's only a few brands. Now, they got a lot of different models and they got all kinds of features, but when you're trying to think like, hey, you know, we need a time card app or a safety app, man, when you can go to an app store and it's dozens and dozens of solutions, that has been kind of an issue. So I think you'll see a little bit more consolidation of either companies partner, companies are acquired. Unfortunately, some will go out of business. It will depend too on the economy, how that rolls. But I think more conversations and trying to transfer that knowledge, and a little bit of consolidation and less options coming out, because at the end of the day, when you have a product, you got to sell it. People have to give you money for it. And that's, I think, becoming a little harder.
Yeah. So do you think you end up more with, you know, Procore and Autodesk being the Ford and the Chevy and like.
Could be a little bit. And they each produce, have their ecosystems. So Procore's got a very robust marketplace. So does Autodesk. You know, there's already a little bit of lining up. It'll be interesting to see. Maybe I'm wrong. It'll be interesting to kind of see of how many more new things can come out. And it may deviate. Maybe it's not so much there's less apps. It's probably changing in focus, because let's just say right now, I think daily reports, time cards, safety, some of the core workflows are pretty saturated. But layout, blue ocean, you know, point lasers, more in the BIM DDC side of how to extend that out in the field. There's probably a little blue ocean there. And some of the, what's been happening with tracking because of COVID, there's probably still some growth sectors, but maybe I should say there's going to be a shift in the tech and maybe downsizing depending on the workflow that we're talking about.
Nice. All right. Well, this was fantastic, Rob. I think people are going to gain a lot from hearing about your path. And I learned a little bit more today than I knew. And I think it was interesting that gradual shift, kind of how you morphed your original safety into another role at the same company. And then use that to leverage it to the insurance world. And I think it's a lot to learn. And hopefully everyone that's listening can maybe think about what steps they can take, because sometimes it does have to be that gradual thing. You just can't jump from being a PM to doing something else. But if you can take on another role within your company and be the PM and do some sales, or the PM and do some tech, PM and do some safety, and then use that as a way to kind of leverage and move yourself on. So I hope people that listen today, maybe it gives them a little push. And even the people that aren't looking, I think there was a lot to learn from this conversation, and that was great. So I appreciate it, and good luck with the safety lunch today.
Hey, Joseph, thank you for the opportunity to kind of share my story, put some knowledge out there, and you're 100% spot on. There are so many roles in construction. If you're not with a construction company or with a product or an association, it's a big industry. It's an amazing industry. There's lots of opportunities. If one thing isn't working out, hopefully people can take a little bit from my path of you can jump around to this industry a lot and still have a place at a table somewhere.
Awesome. Love it. All right. Take care, Rob.